You're listening to the Social Selling Simplified Podcast. Stick around if you too are obsessed with learning things that actually work and believe that success leaves clues. We're all about identifying results-producing roadmaps and getting super clear on how to scale and grow your online business. From part-timer to president, social selling expert Ashley Shaw will help you connect the dots and take the guesswork out of what works to grow a social selling empire. It's time to hear from social selling legends, listen in on truthful conversations, and learn the best tips and tricks to reduce the marketing overwhelm so you can build the social selling business of your dreams. If you're ready to go all in, no holding back, and build the business you've always wanted, you're in the right place. Here's your host, educator, social selling guru, and fitness industry OG, Ashley Shaw.
Hi, Ashley. I'm so excited to get to have this conversation with you. And I'd love to start with just sort of talking to you about kind of what is lighting you up and what is your joy in the world?
Great question. Thanks for having me and taking the time to chat with me. Yeah, I know we're going to cover some beautiful, beautiful tangents and things, and I'm super pumped to be here.
Yes.
So, okay. So to answer the question, what lights me up? I think that if I were to give you a little small mini list, the things would be reducing overwhelm. That is one thing for me that when it comes to marketing and training and educating people, I love to see like their temperature where it's like up, like they're up to their eyeballs and feeling overwhelmed and it just like dissipating. Like that for me is a home run in anything I'm doing when I'm working with people. And I think that feeling of accomplishment when you're able to align your actions with your goals, like there's something that just like warms my soul when that happens for me or when I can have that happen for other people. And then I think lastly, I would say I have a deep connection with words and reading something and instantly knowing where somebody stands, how they feel, I can relate. Like it's those things that someone writes and it gives you like shivers, either good, bad, you know, it gives you some sort of emotion, like you pick that up off the page, off the screen, wherever you're reading it from. I think those are the things that sort of light me up. And I want to know the same for you. What things light you up?
Well, I want to answer that. Before I do, I have to say that I have been able to be privy to your, it's amazing that you say those are things that light you up because I think those are also incredible gifts you have, right? And isn't that interesting that like the gifts we have are, and you have managed to put and land yourself in a place where you have these unique gifts and you're getting the opportunity to do them. And that's of course not by accident, right? Like you've created a world in which you have dreams and you're able to live them out and live your joy, right? It's not even just that those things bring you joy. Like you're literally able to live it out. And very specifically, like I have seen your word genius because I can't even remember like one time Ashley and I were in a mastermind together. And one time there was something I was kind of working on and I could see Ashley over there, like just with this face, like her eyes kind of crunched up and just so intent. And she's like, I could see her like noodling and like then jotting some things down. And like after we took a break, went to the bathroom, I come back and there's this like page full of beautiful words that she had come up with. And I was like, you are magic. Like she's just absolutely magical in that way. So I have gotten to see and just benefit from that as well. So I just wanted to say that because I feel like that is incredibly inspiring that the things you chose that light you up are also the things that are your unique gifts. So that's beautiful and inspirational.
Thank you.
Okay. Let me talk about what's lighting me up. Let's see. I would say probably my worldly why, like my why for why I feel like I exist in the world is to help people come back to feeling like themselves, to feel like they're coming home to who they truly are in their body. Because the experience I've had is myself of feeling like I didn't live in my own body, like I wasn't myself, and knowing how heavy and how that weighs so much on people, and I want to help them really move back into their bodies and to be there, to feel the connection then of mind, body, soul, to feel that connection so that they can truly feel like themselves. So they can really feel that lift that comes, that lightness, that brightness that comes with feeling fully like you, who you are. Mm. And along with that comes for me, like I am a lifelong learner. So I love any situation where I can learn and I can teach. Because as you know, like your deepest learning comes through teaching. So I love to continue to learn all the time about anatomy, about the way that the brain works, the way that the body functions, how business, you know, what I can do and be more efficient and reach more people and all of those things. I love to keep learning. And then I love to be able to teach those things. I love to be able to share that. I feel like knowledge in one respect is power. And then let's flip to the last piece, because I think knowledge alone isn't power. The last thing that really lights me up is being able to take action on dreams, to not only identify that the dreams are there, which I think that's a big piece of like coming back to who you are, to know what the dreams are, but then actually to gain momentum. I love watching momentum. I love being a guide to help people take a first step and then see the momentum it creates. Because I know I was at the point where I was at one point in my life, like I felt super stuck. Like I felt stuck and I didn't realize how simple, not saying easy, but how simple momentum is. And that I wished that I could have had someone just to, you know, just to help to be that guide. And so creating that momentum, I think is so beautiful. And I echo it in the way I think about movement. You know, I teach yoga, so I think about it in the way I actually think about how the body functions, one tiny movement creating momentum. But I also think about that as a lesson for how we then move into our lives as well. Tiny steps that create big changes that move us in the direction of our dreams and our goals.
One thing I admire so much about you, besides all of the things that you've just like beautifully articulated, is this idea of how your mind and your mindset work around freedom and true belief in alignment, and that the universe will put you in the right direction. That's something I've seen come up a couple of times from similar things like masterminds, and just knowing to look inward and pay attention to what's going on in your body to know if you're moving in the right direction, and being 100% comfortable to say no, or, you know, to come back from a path that's not yours, and to have that like 100% faith that your heart is guiding you in the right direction. Like, you're just such a beautiful example of that over and over and over again. And I think many people would say this about you, like just being in your presence. For myself, I just feel lighter and more at ease, because it's just when you have trust in the universe, that energy shifts, you know, like other people feel that too. And it's just a beautiful, you know, aura and energy that you've got going on.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And you know, it actually makes me think that you and I feel both of us have this, a lot of people, the things that they say to us that they mirror back to us about ourselves is that we're very, you know, smiley and positive and bright. And one thing I would like to love to sort of dive into a little bit with you is that sometimes when people think about people like that, they assume maybe that they've never been through what Joseph Campbell called the dark night of the soul. And the dark night of the soul is sort of like in this hero's journey that we're all on, that we go out into the world, and before we can find the light again, before we can come back to ourselves, there is a point at which we have the lowest of lows, right? And those lowest of lows, in the idea of the dark night of the soul, those lowest of lows are, it literally feels like you are in complete darkness, absolutely no light. You cannot see. nothing, the only experience you have is the one that you're in at the moment. And you're so deeply in it that you mm-hmm. feel like things will never change. But that in those moments, transformation occurs, mm-hmm. right? That in those moments, that is when we are made, right? That is the sort of clay of our lives. Mm-hmm. And so I would love to maybe just talk to you a little bit about dark night of the soul or dark nights of the soul in mm-hmm. your life and mm-hmm. maybe in our lives and how that has shaped us to be who we are. And then maybe to talk about some ways that we found our way out of the dark.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, we're just jumping right in here. We're just going straight into the depths.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. It's funny because I know that I have thought about this, like meditated on this. And just one meditation I have to mention before we talk about this a little further is called Live Awake. Okay. Sarah Blondin, she has these journals she wrote and has turned them into meditations. And literally every time I turn that on, I feel like she's speaking to my soul. Like she's just so beautiful, these things that she's written. But I think when it comes to this idea of the dark night, I've always felt I was a little bit out of the norm because I think I live hard. And what I mean by that is that I feel like I feel things on this really deep level and I'm really either can be really up and everything feels light and easy, or there's these valleys where things have felt really low as well. And there's been, I think all of us have these things in our lives that have shaped those and sort of helped us cope. The one that I recall the most, I guess, would be when I was in grade 9, I lost my best friend.
Oh, wow.
And so at that age, when any child is like dealing with something like that big of a trauma, you learn these coping strategies the best that you can in those moments. And I really thought, I think for a really long time, that that was normal for kids to like just feel horrible as young adults, right? Like I thought everyone was like crying in journals and like doing these things that I was doing. I used writing as a mechanism to cope with my feelings. And I started to find exercise in there. My parents had a Gold's Gym in the 80s. So we had all this equipment in our basement. And I just remember those were sort of two things that at that age clicked for me that I could lean on to at least like ease up that pain and that pressure. And it's interesting because those have continued to be pillars in my life of now how I deal with things. I consistently exercise even when I don't feel like it because I know it'll help. And the same with writing, like that started actually earlier, but I leaned a lot on that to help try to formulate what I was feeling and why. So it's interesting how those dark moments can, it actually brought out the things I'm most passionate about in my life now, which is an interesting transformation, right?
It's such an interesting transformation. And it reminds me of, and I'm not going to get the exact details of it right, but there's some stories in Hindu mythology mm-hmm. that talk about, and I'm sure this exists in other philosophical traditions around the world, that if you're not in creation, you're mm-hmm. in destruction, right? Mm-hmm. The yin and the yang. And it strikes me that you found your ways of creating, right? Creating movement with your body, creating with words so that you wouldn't continue down into destruction. Mm-hmm. And no wonder words matter so much to you, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a beautiful way to put it because now I notice when I'm missing out on those two key things, it starts to affect how I feel on a day-to-day basis. And I used to look at exercise as something that was more of a, you know, I think as a lot of girls, you know, when we're younger are sort of set up to feel that exercise is like punishment and my body doesn't look like this. So therefore I have to go through this. And somehow, some way I've been able to really learn to let go of that. It's not that it doesn't, you know, creep up in sometimes, but Now it's like I get to, and even if I don't want to that day, I'm okay with it being 15 or 20 minutes. But I feel like if anyone's read the Atomic Habits, this idea that when you sort of label it yourself, this person, like I'm a person that exercises, I move my body every day. If I start to attach myself to that identity, then it becomes a lot easier to follow through on that. Even if it's just like, that means I'm going to do like a push-up a day or a downward dog, or it doesn't matter what it is, but it's that commitment that I do something to move my body each day.
Absolutely. And you know what I see in the way you explain that too, is the shift that you made from the reason for doing it, say with exercise, you know, that just wanting to change the body and the motivation that so many girls and so many women, and I know this because I lived in this place too for so long, that the motivation for doing that was always about changing who I am, right? In some way or another, and mostly external. But your shift was that it became actually your way to be more of who you are. You know, it became your way to be in alignment with yourself, to be in, you know, right minds, to be in a space where you actually could feel like you living in your own body. So I think that's such an incredible shift. And it's one that's super powerful to use that as a mechanism to help bring you back to light from the dark.
You know what was interesting about that shift? Because I think sometimes we pick up this phrase or something that starts to shape our beliefs and we hold on to it for dear life unconsciously. It's just programmed into the way that we think. And what is so powerful is when you can figure out what is it that you're saying to yourself that might not be your words. And I have done a ton of, as I mentioned earlier, like I like to meditate on things and try to unravel like where these things came from. And it was a comment that was made to me when I was, you know, a child about losing, like this might've been in grade 9 or something, like, oh, you'd be perfect if you lost 5 pounds. This is what was repeating in my mind and what connected that belief about myself that I need to work out to lose. Like, and all of a sudden, as an adult, when I was able to identify that that was the comment and then associate that with, well, if I believe that, that would mean I would look at my best friend and be like, she'd be more perfect if she lost like another 5 pounds. And I truly would never, those words would never cross my lips. And if anyone said that, I would get angry. Like I would probably get violent. You know what I mean? So it sort of forced me to look at that thing I had been telling myself, really decide, do I want to pay attention to that? And is that something I truly believe? Or am I going to choose to change that dialogue? Like, would I feel comfortable saying that to my niece or my daughter? Or, and the truth is absolutely not. Like that would be, you know, that would not sit well with me at all. So I think what's interesting about these shifts that we can make is it's all about the meaning that we give something. And if we can disrupt that language long enough to listen to what we're telling ourselves and rephrase it the way that it, you know, we truly embody it and believe it, I think that for me, that was the one change I made that reframed everything. Yes. That simple realization. So it's funny how that stuff comes up and happens. And
absolutely. And, you know, when you're saying that, I'm thinking about, you know, that we often don't even realize the extent to which the meaning of that story, that the story we tell, infuses not just into that one thing, but into all parts of our life. So, for example, with you, and I had a similar story with, you know, at some point when someone said something to me like, you know, this may be 10, I think, something about like, wouldn't you want to be on a Slim Fast? Maybe you should try that Slim Fast diet, or, you know, something like that. And it stuck with me because it was all about getting smaller. And what I realized is that I had that story of getting smaller was also about taking up less space, using my voice less, you know, not being big in the world, staying small. And when I shifted that story from one, like you were saying, of needing to just be smaller to just being self, like just mm-hmm. acceptance. That was also when I really shifted how I use my voice in the world mm-hmm. and my ability to feel comfortable taking up space with my opinions, my ideas, my dreams, and to stop playing small. I'm curious if you noticed that at the point that you noticed that shift as well.
That exact shift, it was interesting because it was a comment someone in my family had made about another family member. And the comment was that that family member had gained weight. And at that moment, I remember my exact thoughts. I thought, if that is the way that this person thinks, how could I take on those beliefs? Like, that is just absurd. And it really made me pick a side on yes. where I stood. And that's the moment it changed for me.
Oh,
wow. It was that exact moment.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Coming back to like voice, coming back to moving yeah. from your center, your alignment, right? That mm-hmm. then you become more aligned. It's almost like when we can make that shift in one place, it's sort of like the dominoes, like one domino. If we can make the shift in one place, the dominoes mm-hmm. will make it so that we can start to come in alignment in all parts of who we are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so true. It was amazing the release that happened when I made that decision not to focus on it anymore, that yeah. That thought didn't serve me. Those weren't the beliefs I wanted to uphold or teach anyone else. That yeah. was in my influence. So yeah, it was a huge release of that energy, which was, yes. yeah, felt incredible.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, did you continue, were those tools the ones that you continued to take into, you know, other darkness in your life? Or were there other things that you started to draw on? Maybe there's another experience.
Yeah, I think the other one that I can relate to that has been maybe the most recent is, so I've had two back-to-back failed pregnancies. So these were pregnancies at basically by the time genetic testing is done, like we're finding out at like 17 and a half weeks that it's not a viable pregnancy. And so I think that in those moments, I think what felt the darkest was telling myself that it, you know, having kids wasn't for us and that having a family, it was like the language I was using with myself. It was very stuck in terms of being very like, this is being taken away from you. And I think that once I was able to say, change that dialogue a bit to, well, if we don't give up, then it won't be taken away and we can adopt and we can do other things. And I think that this was an interesting one because actually another piece that played into this, I was going for a walk. We live on a little beach town. I was going for a walk. And oftentimes when I'm going through these dark moments, I like to educate myself and listen to podcasts and try to listen to other people. And I heard this story of this woman that was in Jamaica with her two sons and husband. And it was this like just devastating story of how a surge, like her son had gone out in the water. The surge had come and her husband didn't get back in and make it back. Like he ended up drowning. You know, it's interesting when you're going through grief, hearing other people's grief, like makes you feel, I don't know if it's a sense of connection of like, you just feel for someone else. You can get outside of your body for a moment, which at that time felt like I just needed to hear what other people were sort of, you know, going through and dealing with. And in this episode, you know, I'd heard this story on, she said, like, it's the one thing that I can't get back for my kids is their father. And I remember hearing that and feeling like, you know, just ugly crying down the beach, feeling so like my heart breaking for her. And that moment rewired my language because it was like, we can keep trying. You know, there's many ways to make a family. There's many ways to have a baby. So we have an opportunity to keep trying. And I think that I remember that was one of those pivotal moments for me that made me really rethink the way that I was talking to myself about it, because it just opened up this door of like, there is hope there. I'm looking for the darkness. And if I can change up that language, mm-hmm. there does feel like, you know, I still have my husband. I still have my family. Like there's still a lot of things to be very, very grateful for. So that's a moment that really, really stands out to me too, that shifted that language for me.
Yes. Wow. One thing I've noticed is that people in the world around us, when we're experiencing darkness, they often don't know how to talk to us about it. Mm-hmm. In particular with something like a loss, right? And grief. Mm-hmm. And I was very struck by when you and I were talking that you, at one point, and this is maybe, I don't even know when now, maybe a year ago or so, you were sharing about your experience. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, how incredibly brave it was for you to be sharing that. And hearing you talk about that really became an inspiration to other people to then normalize having those conversations. And I'm seeing a connection here that you were listening to other people telling their story.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that gave you a click moment, like that was a light bulb moment for you. I'm wondering if there was a conscious effort, because I feel like you do move very intentionally in the world. Mm-hmm. If that was intentional on your part to share your story so that you could then forge a path that others sometimes are scared to walk.
I actually had a counselor tell me when I was going through, you know, the grief of this, there was this woman that had lost, well, she was pregnant with triplets. I believe it was triplets, and her health was at risk, and they ended up taking the wrong baby because she had one boy and two girls. So her and I got connected, she was going to be someone that I could chat with consistently, because we had gone through experiences that, although they weren't the exact same thing, they were similar in nature of losing, you know, a baby and it being a baby you wanted, right? And so it was amazing. She said to me that when you tell your story 50 times, it moves it from trauma, immediate trauma, to memory. So the more that you can talk about it and put it out there, like the more that that grief will move and it'll start to make its way back into memory. And as soon as I heard that, like it was everything from writing it down to, you know, sharing that story with people, I stopped being afraid of that they would be uncomfortable with it. Because it's not, you know, like it might make other people uncomfortable, but I stopped worrying about that. Like it's my story. It really happened. And the more that I talked about it, the more that it started to like release itself. That really made a big difference for me, that comment from her.
Wow. That is so incredibly powerful. And I think such a good tool, right, for dealing with those struggles in a time where it can give you some purpose at a time that often you don't feel like you have one, right? Mm-hmm. And when things sort of seem like there isn't one. And that is just a beautiful way to create momentum too, mm-hmm. right? We just were talking about that. That's such a beautiful way, like taking that step, moving it, you know, not that you don't ever come back to having waves of grief or things like that, because that's how it works, right? But from moving it, how it gets into your body, how it is stored in your body and where it lies in your body, that momentum of the storytelling and owning that story just seems so powerful. So I just wanted to thank you for that and doing that. And I found that such an inspiration and such a really, truly a beautiful way for you to honor the experience that you had had, is to be able to share that story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing. I had done, I think this was back in my early 20s. I had found this, she was a psychotherapist and where I was going to school, and she was just getting you know, her client roster put together. And she was doing sessions for, you know, lower price points or whatever. So I thought, oh, perfect. Like, I'm going to try this out. And the type of work that she used to do, I remember going in and laying down on this massage table, and she would feel different parts. Like, she would take my arm and sort of swing it back and forth to see how much momentum and how free it was. Like, was there any sort of stickiness or hardness? Like, same with my legs and my arms, both sides, and then my neck as well. And then she would talk me through what was going on in my body. Like, where was I feeling any sensations? And it was incredible how our emotions and the things that we're experiencing can stick in certain places, and they feel warm or cold, they're this color or that color, and what those actually mean when we tune into that. Hmm. So it was just like a beautiful foundation to be early 20s and learn this stuff. And it has definitely set a foundation for learning that movement is the key. Like, yes, that is, you know, something that you've just made, you know, like, very clear for me. It's like the movement was the key, whether it's exercise, the meditation to move the thoughts, you know, yes, the talking about it. Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. And it's so interesting because, of course, like, at our core, we are energy in motion, mm-hmm, you know, like, mm-hmm, if you literally look at us on the atomic level. So isn't that amazing that, like, it makes perfect sense that to help us thrive during, mm-hmm, dark times, we come back to what our true nature is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's so awesome. True. I'll share also an experience I've had, because so many of the things that you've talked about struck me, because they're strategies that I used as well. And probably the biggest moment for me in my life is, and it's kind of a twofold moment, was when one day I was, you know, just, I thought life was going on as normal. I threw my feet to the side of the bed. I stood up and I had such deep vertigo that I just fell to the ground, and I could not basically walk, move, turn my head, or do anything for about 6 weeks. And I had this mystery illness, didn't know what it was. I tried to see, you know, I went to all of these, every specialist that one could imagine to try to, quote, fix me, because at this point I'm like, I'm broken, right? Mm-hmm. I thought of myself as broken. And what started to happen was then it was literally like my body was just completely breaking down. It felt to me like my body was completely breaking down. I couldn't be in the sun without having reactions. I could no longer eat food. I was so nauseated. I mean, I lost so much weight. Then when I lost weight, my thigh, everything, like every system in my body went totally crazy. And that was the first time in my life, which sounds crazy to say, but it was the first time in my life I'd ever then experienced any type of anxiety. And I can remember standing outside and watching my son play in the backyard, and literally, it was a gorgeous sunny day. And I thought, what if a tornado comes and just sweeps us all away? I'm like, what? Did I just think that? Like, I literally felt like I was no longer in my body thinking the thoughts that were normally thoughts that I would have, which then transitioned into panic attacks and all of the, like, the most anxious feelings that I ever could have had, and just inability to function in the world, really. And I had to quit doing what I loved. And I eventually found out that this was all stemming from mold poisoning in the home that I was living in. So the home that was supposed to be the place that I could go to shelter me and keep me safe was covered in toxic black mold under the level. It's what's called a conventional foundation, raised up. And that whole level there, I was sleeping over this every single night. And it got to the point where I had this knowing that it was probably going to be it. I had asked everybody. I had gone to every specialist possible. No one even thought of this. But I just finally said to my husband, I know that this is what it is. I know that there's something not right in this physical environment. And we then started a life as gypsies, where we left the house and went to all the different places we could, stayed with family, went to hotels, got Airbnbs, went to all these places for maybe about 6 weeks, until I could finally just sort of be out of the space. My body could physically calm down. And it took my mind a while after that. And I finally looked at my husband at one point and was like, you know, I just don't want to be alive. It's just so miserable to be in my body, in my life, to feel like every time my son wants to play with me, that I have to say, no, I'm sorry. You know, mommy has to go lie down. I can't, you know, I can't move. I can't turn my head. I can't do any of those things. And at that time, I started, because I was literally doing nothing but lying there, listening to podcasts, learning. I went back to doing something that I knew lit me up. And I started learning and I was listening to podcasts. And just like you, with the listening, right, listening to other people's stories, I listened to someone, she's kind of transformational teacher, yoga instructor named Srimati or Julie Piat. And I heard her podcast, heard her on a podcast say, talking about a darkness in her own life, that if we are lucky, we will experience at least one opportunity to be brought to our knees, because that is the moment when everything that doesn't matter in our lives is stripped away and we will truly get to learn who we are. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm lucky. I'm lucky. Mm-hmm. I lived my whole life up to this point not getting to have this experience. And now I am getting to have it, right? The no mud, no lotus. Like it truly shifted. That was my light bulb. And it shifted my understanding of the experience where I could own the experience as a journey that I was on. And that also gave me the moment where I got to shift the ownership I had of my own body, because I was relying on the medical system to tell me what was going on with me. Guess what? I was the only person who ever could have known that. This was my experience. And I got to strip away, when I heard her say that, I got to strip away everything that everyone else was saying about me. And I got to come to my own inner wisdom of what was actually happening with me. And that was the moment when I took ownership of the experience, when I took ownership of the journey, and when I took ownership of my body, that it all started to come back, that it all started, you know, that everything started to change, that everything shifted. And it also was the moment when I was reminded, even though I'd been teaching it for years, that I got to live it, that the body, the mind, and the spirit are all connected. Like that we can't change our body without also dealing with what's going on in the other realms. They're all one thing. There's no separation. I was thinking of them as separate. Like I was thinking I was living in this body that was breaking. No, that was me. That was me. There was no separation. And it almost harkens back to the separation that I experienced before when I was trying to like be something different in my body, lose 5 pounds or not have this hatred for my thighs because they're bigger than someone else's. Whatever it was moving from the external, external, external to more internal. And to see and to understand that. And I started like diving into all the tools. Like I started moving to gratitude, to win those moments, literally when I would go into a panic attack, when nothing is present except fear. I started saying, what can I talk about that I'm grateful for? I still have my 2 feet on the ground. You know, I would literally go through, okay, time to go to gratitude, 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 gratitude. And I would just work on rewiring my brain for that gratitude. I would every morning when I woke up, before I got out of bed, I would smile. And I think of you as like, I think this is funny because I think of you as like a human smile. I would literally just lay there. I'd be so miserable. And I would honestly be terrified because I had taught my body to be terrified when I got out of bed because that was when vertigo would start. So I would smile just to set the tone. I would literally sit there looking like a crazy Cheshire cat. Like laying in bed, smiling for 5 minutes, even though I felt like some in my body, what was creeping up was fear, so that I could start to like weigh the scales differently, so that I could turn that from fear into joy, turn that moment from fear into joy. And so I feel so deeply that idea of needing to learn, needing to hear people's stories were critical for me. And then being able to own that experience. And then to turn that eventually into teaching so that I could learn it on a more deep level. Because right when all this had happened, I felt like I had missed out on, this was about 6 months of my life until I really got to that point of like the click. Mm-hmm. And right then my father was diagnosed with lung cancer. And I felt like, oh my gosh, I'd missed all this time with him. This is my, you know, I was like, then it all came up again. I'm like, this is all my fault. I missed this time from him. Why didn't I know? Why didn't I know sooner? And then I went to just spend as much time as possible with him. And at one point we had been there for the holidays with my family, lived about 3 hours from my parent, and had come home, and we're home for maybe about a week when my mom called and said, you know, things have taken a turn for the worse. Literally within an hour, we were in the car, we went there, and I said to myself, if I don't create, just as you talked about this, if I don't start creating something, I'm going to destroy. And I started recording the first podcast I ever did, which was a 21-day happiness challenge, right? Mm. The insane irony of creating a 21-day happiness challenge at the moment. And I think it was on day 18 of that 21-day happiness challenge that I lost my father from this earth. And I kept going. I kept doing it. I knew that me being in creation in that moment was going to stop me from destroying myself, right? That I was going to stop me from sliding back into the darkness. And I was able to truly be in that moment of deep grief, but feel an enormous amount of joy for who I was. Even though I was sad, I was so sad and grieving, I could still be with that. So I just want to echo again that idea that you were coming to, that you found, you know, as this girl in your experience of loss, is that creating and finding a way to create, whether it be words, whatever it be, because I think that each of us has our unique way that we're meant to do that. It's just finding that and tapping into it. And if you don't know what it is at first, do any kind of creation and it'll lead you to it. You know, maybe it's knitting, crochet, I don't know, whatever it can be, that creation is incredibly powerful to move from darkness into light.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I love how you said that comment about moving to gratitude, because I've definitely felt this and heard, I believe it's Tony Robbins that talks about this, that you can't feel two emotions at once. So instead of sitting in the anxiety, if you can move your mind to feeling and recounting what you're grateful for, it helps you, like this theme we're talking about of movement and moving through, it helps you to move through that. And Tony Robbins has this incredible, it's like a daily, what does he call it? We'll have to put this in the show notes, but he has this daily sequence. Oh, he calls it moving and breathing. And it's this beautiful startup sequence to your day where you do 5 minutes of moving, you're walking and a certain breathing. Have you heard of this before?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And then you have your gratitude. You go through your list out loud of all the things you're grateful for. And he walks you through like how long that lasts through music, and then your vision of what you want to create, and then exercise. And it just, yeah, I totally echo that. I think the gratitude piece is in the darkest times, that's been the biggest light for me, is thinking about those things, like what I'm truly grateful for.
Right. And you know, what's so funny is I had, as someone who'd been teaching, like I've been teaching, you know, anatomy and medical anthropology, I had talked to people before about like what happens in the brain science with gratitude. Like, you know, that you can literally see changes in the structure of the brain with a gratitude practice. And I knew that. But when you are in a dark night of the soul, nothing feels like it will work. Like nothing feels like it. And you need some point at which to have that sort of click reminder, that moment, maybe it's the lowest moment, the darkest moment, whatever it is, so that you can come back to the tools and strategies you have, which is why knowing about these now, right? And talking, and you and I talking about this and hearing your tools right now, someone might find themselves in darkness, especially we're recording this during the era of the coronavirus, of COVID-19. And a lot of people might be going through even, you know, their own micro traumas, their own large traumas around this. Mm-hmm. Just knowing that there's a tool out there that they can just start to use, just start to go to. And that's how it was for me. I was like, okay, gratitude. That's all I could remember was like, mm-hmm. gratitude. I know this works. I know it's going to work. And I know that my mind and my body are connected. Like they're talking about, we don't have in the Western world, a good way of even addressing that we are a whole human being. And, you know, other traditions have this, you know, out of the philosophical traditions that yoga as a movement practice emerged from, they have ways of thinking about this. This is us. We aren't our bodies. Our bodies are a tool to connect deeply into who we are at center. So yes, gratitude is such an easy and powerful practice. It can be words, can be stating it out loud. And it's just, it becomes a reminder to us to step away from fear and move into love, right? And I think Gabby Bernstein talks about that a lot. Like, it's always about choosing love in the moment. And it can be a hard choice, but it is a simple choice, you know, to keep going back to love.
Well, and I think when we go through these life events, whether it be, you know, what we're experiencing right now with the impact of the coronavirus, or, you know, these events that happen, I'm going to say for us, that happen for us as we're, you know, navigating life's journey, it's amazing what happens for highly functioning individuals because we minimize the trauma and effect that trauma has on us. I just had a conversation with Amy Wine, who is a mutual friend, obviously from our mastermind, who's a therapist and marriage counselor. And that's something that we dove into, was about this, you know, what we are going through now is a trauma. And there are things that happen with trauma in your body and the way that we deal with those. But when you are a highly functioning individual, it's almost like you don't think that you can be impacted by it, or you're not paying attention to those things. And I think that is probably true of most people, that we minimize those things. But if someone else were to look in and say, oh, this is what you're going through right now, these are big life events. They have a scale. My sister talks about this. She's a doctor. They have this scale of life events that happen and how impactful they are on you. You know, things such as losing a pet, losing loved ones, things like that. And they have factors of impact. But when we consider those things and how impactful they are, sometimes that is the only connection that we make to how much that could be impacting us directly. We don't see that linkage sometimes.
Yes. We don't see that linkage. And like you mentioned before, those things, regardless of the perception we have of how big an impact they play in our lives, they still are stored. They get stored, right? They get stuck in the body. They're there. And sometimes, just like you use storytelling as a means to process that, sometimes the acknowledge, because in that way, storytelling was your acknowledgement of your experience, right? You didn't minimize it. You didn't maximize it. It was what it was. And you told the story of it as such. You told your experience without self-judgment, without your self-judgment. And sometimes I feel like maybe a tool that can really work is moving from whatever way we can, and these are all great tools, to help us go from the point of judging ourselves for what our experience is to just letting it be what it is. Have you found any moments for you where that just letting something be was sort of a transformational moment for you?
Yeah, actually, I think most recently, I think I've been easy to quickly jump to conclusions and judge myself. And I think the more that I spend time in the entrepreneurial space, the more that I realize there's no guidebook for how this has to look. Like, if I want to work 2 hours a day, that's what I'm going to do. Like, I don't need to work 8 hours a day to feel like I put in a full day. And one of the things that has come up for me recently in the last couple of weeks, I've had this sort of, you know, overwhelming sense of anxiety and overwhelm. You know, my initial reaction might have been in the past, like, how are you even overwhelmed right now? Like, you don't have a lot going on. And rather than go that route, I was meditating and trying to figure out what is pushing me in that direction. I mean, there's the obvious fact that life is just different right now. And I know that that has an impact. I might not know how that's playing out, but it definitely is having some sort of impact that I might connect the dots later on what that looks like. But it occurred to me that a lot of people were asking me for things, like for my time and to help them with certain things. And this had me thinking about actually my inner child and this idea of like, I'm not protecting her right now and that time by saying yes to everyone. If I'm already feeling like I can't pour from an empty cup and then I'm agreeing to do all these other things for other people, then that is not something I want to continue down that road. So rather than, you know, just telling myself to suck it up, because I think we've all probably had those conversations with ourselves, like, it's not that bad, come on. Rather than going through those motions one at a time, I thought about those places that I was being pulled, and that when I thought about it, does this decision feel light or heavy? And it was going right to heavy. I decided that I was going to write them a message and say, you know, politely, I can't commit to this right now. I need to get my own house in order with things. And one at a time, I sent those messages, waited for the response, you know, of course, on the edge of my seat thinking they're going to lose it. You know, like that's, I don't know how sometimes we talk ourselves out of making the right decision for ourselves. The other person's going to be disappointed.
Yes.
And each one of those came back with, I completely understand. And so it was an interesting reflection of, I think if anyone has done that inner child work before, and, you know, for those that haven't, it's just this idea of ourselves as children before anyone has told us this is right or wrong. This is, you know, anyone's told us no. It's like that, you know, no inhibitions version of ourselves. Yes. That ultimately that's for me where I have to go back to sometimes to connect the dots of what is causing that pain or anxiety or overwhelm, and then honoring that first, if that makes sense.
Oh, this resonates so deeply, because when I started to use the word rewild, like the image for me was my freest version of me as a child before the layers of expectations and judgment happened, you know, before the memory of someone saying, you need to change who you are. When I got to, you know, put on a tutu and cowboy boots and like dance around to like my father playing the guitar, and literally like you don't have a care in the world of what someone else thinks. You are just full of joy for the present moment. And so I love the concept of coming back to that, you know, taking yourself back to that place and saying, I want to protect that. How can I protect that? By making the decisions. Your use of the word light and heavy is so beautiful, right? And people know, they know what that feels like in their body, right? And maybe the part of it is just say, okay, I'm going to look at this. I'm going to look at this. Start to contrast that, because some people might not actually know yet how to discern. We all know it's because it's in our bodies, but they might not yet know how to discern what feels light and what feels heavy. And so sometimes it's just making those comparisons, you know, figuring out, like you said, going through and feeling, what does it feel like for me to do this? How do I feel pulled? Like, does it feel light my or heavy? Are my shoulders up or down? Am I clenching my jaw? Do I start to get a release of cortisol? Because like every time we have a thought in the body, it turns into a cascade of chemicals that tell us how to feel. And so notice what chemicals, like, do you get starting to get like tingly excitement in like butterfly feeling, or do you get sort of like this wash of more like a stress hormone, like you want to crawl into a ball, right? And sometimes it's really just learning that discernment from the place of how you can protect that little girl. And maybe those are even two separate things, but I love the way that you bring them, like you use them together. Like, I think you can go back to the inner child And you can also use the discernment of light and heavy. But I love seeing it from, here's the inner child. I want to protect the lightness and the joy and the freedom that she is experiencing by only letting things into her world that encourage that, rather than putting heaviness on her that discourages that freedom. You know, that sort of the opposite of like living a wild life, or the what rewilding is like moving away from the domestication. And domestication is like your whole existence is for someone else's pleasure, right? Mm-hmm. Your existence is for someone else, not just to be running wild and free.
Mm, I love that. That those words put together are just such a beautiful, it's beautiful imagery to think about yourself as a young child, just running through fields, or just, you know, whenever I think of that first version of myself that I can remember, I'm never sure if it comes from the first, you know, photo that I see where I can sort of remember like what I was wearing or picking that out, or, but it's such a, it's a heartwarming thing to think of that little person that we all were and how hope and joy was there with the simple things. And I think just like you had said at the very beginning, like that coming home to that, like that is, I mean, I feel really feel like that is the purpose of life, and our goal is to get closer and closer to that of who we are, truly always were.
Yes. And I think that can be such, having that inner child, I'm so glad you brought this up, because I think having that vision of that inner child is really a vision of what we want to come back to for our lives. Mm-hmm. And one thing I admire so much about you is that you have dreams, you have goals, and you take action to move toward them, right? So one thing I'd love to hear from you is maybe a little bit about, what are some dreams for your life right now? Like, what are some dreams you have? And I would love to know how or if they align with who your, you know, your little Ashley, who your inner child was, you know, the freedom and joy that you had in those moments.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that one of the things that I feel very strongly about is giving female entrepreneurs the tools to quit a job they hate and do what they truly feel drawn to and what they love. I think in my own life, I've been blessed with the ability to write and, you know, to create for other people, for the ones that don't feel like they maybe have that same creative spirit where they like to sit down and write. They get writer's block and it feels like it derails their whole business for them because they can't get to that place. So I feel very fortunate that that is what I get to do for other entrepreneurs, is help them inject that authentic voice in their business and help them save time because it feels overwhelming for them. So that feels like it's the purpose, and that connects very well with my inner child, that little writer, that person that, you know, that helped them go to a really safe space, you know, when I was a child. And then when it comes to the idea of what the vision and the goals that are drawing me forward, I think it's this idea of helping entrepreneurs create a life on their own terms. Mm-hmm. And I have this goal in 10 years. My goal is to help 100,000 female entrepreneurs be able to do exactly what they love and quit a job that they hate. And it's interesting with the climate of things going on right now, because it's created all this space for people to really hone in on what that vision or dream may be. So I'm finding there's more and more people that are going in that direction to really figure out what they want to do. So I think those are the things. And if I were to answer that question about how does my vision relate back to my little, I think that when I was a kid, I was a rebel. Like I did not color in the lines. Like I really wanted to live life on my own terms. And I remember my dad saying to me, like, if you could just write books and, you know, you'd get to do what you love, but you'd also have royalties coming from that and be able to live the life you want. I think it goes full circle because that's exactly what I do now is my writing affords the ability to have the freedom and to not have to look at every day and think I've got to work a 9-to-5. I can travel. It's that freedom in there that allows me to be more of who I always was. If that makes sense.
Yes. Be more of who you always were. Oh, that's such a powerful way to put it. Such a powerful. I love that. And I think it's so interesting because you and I share that vision in so many ways. And I think that that is maybe part of that. Going through some kind of darkness makes you then also appreciate transformations and to help walking other people through transformations. And that's the human experience too, right? I mean, it's the human experience is everyone is going to have hard times, dark times, and we all want to support other people as they move through them in some way. And I love that you've been able to turn that into a way that you also create your life, create your income on your terms. And that is, of course, for me too, the most appealing, beautiful part of being an entrepreneur is that not only does it allow me to create my life on my terms, but it allows me to help other women do the same thing. Because knowing it's possible, had I known this was possible sooner, I would have been doing it, right? Like I just didn't know it was possible. And just helping to make possibility visible, not only for myself and reminding myself that every single day, like this is my life. This is amazing. To help people know that they can have that same thing, I think is just such an inspiration.
Well, and I think sometimes when I think back of working in corporate and the different bosses that I had reported up to and that sort of thing, I had a case of, I would call it like sort of like bad boyfriend syndrome, where I remember a couple of things that were said to me that were demeaning, that did not help add to my value, but it was my choice to buy into those and also believe them, you know, when we have that choice. Yes. But if those things had not been said to me, I wouldn't have had the drive to do what I've done to create this business. I think if I were happy all the time and just if I were satisfied, it wouldn't have pushed me. And I remember this is like crazy turn of events of what's happened. But I remember this one boss I had that he is the president of a chain of 21 fitness clubs. I had said to him, like, I really want to go into training and development and education. Like, I'm so passionate about it. And he was like, there's no money in that. And like, just gave me this like BS answer. And like full circle, like that's exactly where there is a flow of income and the world has changed overnight. Yes. And so as much as those experiences, as we were talking about, when you live hard, when you're somebody that puts every bit of your energy into your work and what you do, and those things were so hurtful at the time when I was going through them, but I wouldn't trade them back. Because it's, you know, it's really gotten me to a place of fight of like, this is what I'm going after. And no one can convince me that the other option is better. Yes. Like they just, I won't be convinced. So,
right. It reminds me of, you've probably heard the quote before, but from Alex L, without my struggle, I wouldn't have found my strength. And that is, I do really believe, as you mentioned, that things happen for us. And that just simply shifting the way we use the words to say that allows us to believe it. Just simply changing the words. You know, words are thoughts. Thoughts become our feelings by literally the way that they get instilled into our body. And so I feel that so strongly. And I think you're such a beautiful example of that.
Oh, thank you. I'm really curious about this question for you about your inner child and how that has showed up for you now as well, like in your life as an entrepreneur.
Yes. Well, you know, what's interesting is when I first started in this entrepreneurial journey, I was teaching college and I love teaching. I love the teaching part. I didn't love the academic setting. And not only that, what you do tends to be, in my opinion, not compensated for the work that you put in, right? And there's mm-hmm. a cap on where you can go there.
Yeah.
And I just didn't imagine, however, that there was a world where I could also start doing things like teaching. I got into the online world and was sort of there, not necessarily, I just sort of was like, okay, what can I do? And then I was like, I love to teach. I love to teach. This, it allows me to just keep learning and learning, and it allows me to share and go on a journey with people. And it is so funny because right around that, I mean, I literally had that click. I had that click and I said to my mom, like, I want to teach online, like I want to do online courses and everything. And she said, wow, that's really interesting. Do you remember what we used to play when you were little? Like, she said it was the only thing that we would play when I was young. And this was definitely like it was at the same time as when I can remember myself dancing around and, mm-hmm. you know, just feeling so free and running. We lived actually in the Philippines at the time, and there were sugarcane fields. And I would remember myself like running through the sugarcane fields. And my mom said, like, the only time you would ever come in and stop doing stuff, stop like dancing around or running around outside, is to come play teacher. And we would play school, and I would be the teacher, and I would have my mom and my dad sit there, and I would ask them to draw things, and I would call it, my mom's name is Deanie and my dad's name is Jerry. So I'd say, little Deanie and little Jerry, I need you to do this. Here's your class assignment. We can do this. And my mom, like my dad would draw a little stick figure, and my mom would kind of laugh. And I'm like, little Deanie, please be sweet to little Jerry. This is a space for all of us to learn together, you know? And that I would get there. And I know that like my soul's calling is to teach and to be able to create communities where people can come together to learn. And that lights me up. And it was one of the reasons why when I could no longer teach during, you know, sort of my dark night of the soul, I felt lost. I felt like I just couldn't be myself. And it's so interesting that then it wasn't until sort of after that, that I had that click moment of, that's what I need to be doing. It's what I need to be doing, but the way I was doing it wasn't serving me. And that I really needed to come back to, just like you, the part of it that had the freedom for me to be more myself in doing that thing. And so I think it's so interesting. Yeah, my inner Leah, like there was this inner knowing, right? That was something that always lit me up. But I had to come back to it in the way that still gave me the freedom to run to the sugarcane fields, you know? Mm-hmm. And so being able to find that, it's so funny that we're talking about this, because literally just yesterday I was out walking and I had the thought in my mind, how can this be my life? Like, this is amazing. I sometimes am blown away that this is my life. And I feel like sometimes we don't give ourselves enough credit, because I have seen the way you created that intentionally. Sometimes for you, it might not feel like that, but I probably need to say that to myself too. I created it. It's not that it just happened to me, right? Mm-hmm. I made the choices to go back to find the inner knowing of what the things were that lit me up when I was in that free state, and to rewild my life, like to come back to them, you know, to stop doing the things that didn't fill my cup, that didn't bring me joy, and start moving toward the things that do, to have an intentional dream and then move in the direction of it. So I love that we're talking about it, because I literally had that moment yesterday. And granted, there was a moment like 3 days before when it was raining and, you know, I can't see my mom right now and I can't give her a hug, that I was like, screw all this. Gosh, this sucks, right? And that's okay. And that's okay you can still live in joy and have those moments. You can still live the life of your dreams and there still be darkness, just like you were talking about, like feeling that sort of overwhelm and anxiety that you were feeling last week. Mm-hmm. Those are okay. And we can still live our dreams and live in our joy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I have one final question for you. I would love to know if you had something that you could tell Ashley, you know, before all of those things, before the layers of life started to descend on her, as she was going to be making her journey to you now, where you are, what would you share with her as sort of your big lesson for her to move into that journey?
I think that what resonates with me now is that there's this magic little unicorn leaving glitter dust in this trail of glitter dust where she goes. And it's important to just follow that trail, like wherever she's leading that trail, to just to follow that gut instinct and go. I think whenever I talk about finding your sweet spot and who you really are deep down, I really liken it to we're all these magical unicorns that are, when you really think about how our life experiences have created who we are, there's something really magical in all of us. And I think trusting that and knowing that everything that we're doing, there's a purpose behind it. I think that's what I would, in some way, that little person would understand. I could probably fine tune it, but that's where I would go. How about you?
First, one thing I love about that about you is whenever I am with you, it's so funny because as you move, you just have a glow about you. If there could be a person who, as she moves, literally, I would feel like sort of rainbows and glitter, like coming off of her and rain, you know, just exactly like you literally exude magic. So I think it's beautiful that you say that. I would say, wow, the lesson I wish I maybe had learned sooner, so I would want her to know, is failure is not only an option, it is the path. Like it is. Perfection doesn't exist, and do the things that scare you. Do the things that you will fail at so that you can get to the place of living your dreams. I don't even want to say sooner, right? But so that you can get to that place, because you will not get to the place of living your dreams without taking the actions that will cause you to fall and to fail. I've heard someone say, you know, that bumper sticker, what would you do if you knew you could not fail? And somebody turning it on its head, what would you do? What do you want to do so much that you will do even if you fail? And that would be really the lesson I would want her to have. I would want her to know, because I felt myself creeping toward perfection and the desire to not want to fail so much in my life. I think that if I had been able to, as my little Leah, do that, I could have embraced that freedom and that joy to be truly who I was in a way that was much more profound.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This has been such a fun conversation. Wow. I just feel like, so speaking of lit up, I feel so lit up by it. And I'm just so grateful to have, you know, a soul sister like you to be able to just jump straight into the depths with, you know, just really to go there and just to help me see things in my life from a new perspective, you know, to be a mirror for me and to help reflect that back. So thank you so, so much for this. This has just been beautiful.
Oh, I feel the exact same way. It's been just lovely to chat with you. And thank you so much for sharing all of your beautiful insight and wisdom. I always feel so energized after chatting with you.
So I'm so glad.
Appreciate that. Where can my peeps reach out to you?
Yes, I am on Instagram at Leah, L-E-A dot Pickard, P-I-C-K-A-R-D. And my business, my online version of my business, is Happy and Free, which is at happyandfree.me. So they can find all things related to that and info about the podcast and everything there too.
If you're ready to turn your Beachbody dream into a Beachbody business, I have something special for you. Business Bootcamp for Fitness Coaches will help you overcome the overwhelm of never knowing what to post so you can show up consistently on social, get off the icky hey girl hamster wheel, and finally see more engagement from customers who enthusiastically slide into your DMs to join you. This Facebook group is totally free to join. Head to ashleyshaw.ca/bootcamp to sign up now. And just for joining, you'll get 5 totally templated social media posts that work, accountability and camaraderie in our private Facebook group, and that post-workout feeling of accomplishment. See you there. Again, you can head to ashleyshaw.ca/bootcamp to sign up now.